Welcome to the Conversation Lab. I'm Don Schaefer. If democracy begins in conversation, then we need to nurture a culture where ordinary people like us routinely talk about those things that help us understand each other, whether it's about climate, race, religion, gender, or politics. When we're trying to make sense of our city and the world we live in, every question comes with a set of assumptions about the nature of ourselves and our place in a larger world. The Conversation Lab provides a safe place to talk about some of those things. This program is produced by CFRO-FM in Vancouver. It's available on air and online on various platforms, and we appreciate the help of Vancouver's community groups. Our guests for this episode of the Conversation Lab are Brian McKinnon, who is the Executive Director of CFRO Co-op Radio, and Meenakshi Mano, who is the past chair of the cooperative's board, a current board member, and on-air host. Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, is a not-for-profit, listener-supported, multilingual community radio station that has provided Vancouver with alternative public affairs, music, and arts programming since 1975. The organization is rooted in values of participation, cooperation, social justice, independence, and community. CFRO broadcast over 90 different programs produced by over 250 volunteer programmers. When I was a young teenager, I remember being sent to bed, going upstairs, and listening to my transistor radio to hear all those voices that were coming from distant cities and around the world. And I was so fascinated by the magic of that little box. And I'm curious what's drawn each of you to find yourselves in this day and time working in a radio station.
I would say that, so I grew up in Montreal, and the radio station I listened to a lot was the sort of classic rock 1970s.
Shome FM.
Shome FM, exactly. Yeah. And then I discovered the McGill station, CKUT, that's what it's called. And there was a show called The Homo Show with David Shannon, which was, I think, followed by Dykes on Mics with Karen Herland. And my world exploded, and I suddenly discovered community radio. And that was probably around the mid to late 80s.
Meenakshi, how about you?
I'll speak to how I learned about co-op radio specifically, because I feel like that's been my community radio station since about 2014 or 13. Through my friend's partner, we were going to see a show at the York. I think we were going to see one of the East Van Pantos. And I had been really interested in prison justice work. And so I knew of the show Stark Raven, which has been on co-op radio for, I think, over 30 years. And my friend was like, yeah, this is my partner, Emily. And I was like, oh my God, you are Emily, like the Emily from Stark Raven. And I was just so excited because I feel like what a show like that has done, and there are other shows also at co-op radio that have done this, is kind of built a long-standing community and a long-standing connection to community-based organizing. And I think it's incredible that that can be achieved through the radio. And I think in some ways the radio is like the ideal medium to maintain that long-term work, because to me I see community radio as providing an important not only place of work, but also place to work and place to organize and place to connect with people.
Can you talk a little bit about what co-op radio is or what it isn't? And I'm curious how you both look at that question.
Well, what it is we are 350 volunteers who come in each week to produce and learn how to produce great radio. And we do it in over 10 languages, which is not an easy feat to pull off on a weekly basis. We are access, and we are by and for people. I think the best way I've heard it described was from Kelly Rayburn, who was on the show Community Living, which is a show by and for people on the spectrum. I believe their tagline is special guests with special needs. And he would say that when he appears on a show, as a guest on a commercial station, he really feels mediated by that experience, that it's not really his voice that is represented. But when he's at Co-op Radio, he's talking about himself to his people.
Meenakshi?
So I come at that as a former member of the board of directors of Co-op Radio and a current director at CREST, the Community Radio Education Society. And I feel like I could speak to a lot of what Co-op Radio isn't, because it comes up, it's come up in board meetings and AGMs and meetings with members. And I think it's, like Brian described, a place that is foremost by and for the communities that we broadcast to. It's a member-owned station. It's not commercial radio. It's sometimes not polished like commercial radio is. Sometimes it's messy like the communities that we all live in are and can be. But that's also kind of the...
I think that's a compliment.
I think so. I think the mess is... It's nice. It keeps you busy. It keeps people interested in the station. It's we don't always have like that beautiful kind of 30-second fade out like they do on other radio stations. You know when you're listening to Co-op Radio, you know you're connected to someone who's taken the time to be here, is a member of a cooperative and is producing content, not for money, not for like... really anything but like a real commitment to whatever show they're on. And I think that that's just so incredible. It's also challenging because we're not commercial radio. We're not connected to a university. So we often have to be very dynamic and creative in how we stay on the air. And I just want to credit Brian for doing that for the past few years, for really approaching the challenge and like the beautiful challenge that is Co-op Radio.
I'm going to assume that you've had a longer perspective to look at Co-op over time, having been the past chair and being on the board now. What are some of the issues that face Co-op?
The most obvious one is just the financial piece, because funding. Again, we are not like an institutional radio station. We're not playing advertisements. We don't have funding from someone who works in big pharma, big fisheries, a really big car dealership. Mm-hmm. So we have to work kind of on a piecemeal basis at times, right? We're applying for grants here and there. We're looking to community members to fundraise for us. We're doing member drives, all of those kinds of things. And so I think that's always a piece that the station feels in constant flux. But my friends who have been programmers here for a long time tell me like that is also the nature of Co-op Radio. It always feels like it's on the brink.
It seems like radio overall is changing. There are different models. There's a commercial model. I call it a bums and seats model, where the radio station is commercial enough to attract a large enough audience, which attracts a market share, and that market share gets sold as advertising to the big companies that you just talked about. So it's a fairly traditional advertising model. CBC, college radio stations in particular, have funding usually from the university or from the government in the case of CBC, where Co-op is really out there on its own. To do the best it can. How can you fund it? Is it only membership driven, or can you find other sources of funding? Can you do crowdfunding? Can you do membership? Can you do donations? Can you sell advertising?
A bit of all of the above. Okay. Less on the advertising. We've really only begun to dip our toes into that area, and always with values aligned organizations. It's very important about, you know, who represents our brand.
Or you probably wouldn't accept advertising from a big oil company.
No. Only
I'm just guessing.
Only on April 1st, probably. But right. half of the funding we receive comes from regular listeners who really believe in community radio and really believe in having that voice for the voiceless. I remember talking to a donor, they were saying there's a shift that happens when someone suddenly just gets what it is we're trying to accomplish here, and then they very quickly understand how important it is. And increasingly, we're getting We have there's an aging population of listeners from Co-op Radio because we have been around since 1975, and there's a lot of a number of people have passed through these doors, and their communities come with them, and their friends and families, and then they get hooked onto the radio. We're seeing some of when I'm in conversations with people, they're beginning to leave a portion of their will as a legacy gift for the station so that we can continue, because all the listeners know what we're up against. How have we been able to survive in an increasingly, shrinking pool of resources that are available to nonprofits in general, and specifically to community media? There are some grants available. There are some foundations, and there's a bit of government money, which fills the gap. And then there are, everything from bake sales to small concerts to throwing parties. We kind of have a rent party mentality sometimes, which is it's the end of the month and we're a little short. We need to raise some money. Let's go. What are we going to do? Because it's volunteer driven and a cooperative, everyone here really feels ownership to the station. And we talk a lot about how it's everyone's responsibility to make sure that we can stay on the air and keep the lights on and and continue to keep the doors open to provide the programming that we do. And there's also a coming together where people help each other. There will be, we represent many diverse, racialized, indigenous communities. There are some shows which are, by and for urbanized indigenous youth. Their ability to raise money is going to be less than someone who is perhaps a professional living on the West Side, who's running a show more, music oriented show. And as an organization, there are those with the means who can raise more money, will raise more money, and those who will, can raise what they can raise, will raise that. And no one ever really complains about that. We all understand that's why we're here.
I'm curious, how do you decide what programs go on the air and which ones don't? How does that conversation take place?
So it's no single person's decision. We have a programming committee that historically has been composed of programmers from a variety of communities. We had an equity lens to that committee, so we wanted to make sure that the voices of non-English as the first language speakers, racialized folks, indigenous folks were part of that committee. And they would kind of pilot shows because, again, radio time is precious. We want to make sure that what goes out to the community is actually meaningful and kind of meets our mandate. So the programming committee would typically meet with new members, new show, like folks who wanted to pitch new shows. And then they may pilot that show. I think it was for like a few months that was like the initial period. And then they would give that show a seal of approval. I don't know what the status of the programming committee is today, because again, I think the other limiting agent at Co-op Radio is people power. And so, we always are impacted by finances, but then also the availability of people in an increasingly expensive city to come and do volunteer work on committees like programming, fundraising, tech committees is a challenge. So the last I knew, the programming committee was in a bit of flux because of that, because we weren't able to maintain like a longstanding committee where you're listening to hours of radio. I mean, many of us do, but not really like with a focus on the content or how it's delivered or whether it meets the requirements of Co-op Radio, when the station identifiers come on, things like that. So I think that that's another piece of it, though. But what's important about new programming here is that it's never one single person's decision. Because, again, we are a cooperative. We make decisions generally by committees and hopefully in consensus.
It seems like a challenging process.
Yes, and you've had that feeling that we've been hanging on by our fingernails. But for years, which is phenomenal.
Hanging on by your fingernails.
Yes. For years. I mean, we've been doing it for years. They're getting a bit ingrown. I think that, like, there is such a heartfelt kind of dedication to co-op radio. And one person who's like, I can't hear you. So I don't know if you saw those comments on social media. There's usually a couple. and I think that people really, like, my partner will listen to co-op radio on his commute. Because, you know, it's also like, it's people in your community, which is cool. I don't regularly see Anna Maria Tremonti, but I'm like, oh, I see the people who do The Rational or Red Eye. Like, those are people in my community. Like, it's like, I see them at the co-op grocery store. I see them at CCC in line. Like, and I, yeah, like, that's kind of this connection that people may have. Definitely, it's hard work. Anyone who's been involved in any kind of cooperative knows that, though, right? That when you're working alongside people, you may have a common vision, way that you think it should happen, but you're also working with people. I mean, that's the messiness of it, that we're not like purely profit driven. We're not making decisions around the bottom line. We're not making decisions around like whether we're taking money from Exxon or Shell. Like, a lot of what we're doing is deeply ethical. It's very personal for people. I know that like people are bringing their whole selves, not only to the programming to the they do, but to how they engage with the station across time. And I feel like I've seen that foremost at AGMs with members who come and are very impassioned about the work that Co-op Radio is doing.
What's the difference between a not-for-profit and a cooperative?
Well, I would say that a cooperative comes together with
A community need.
It's community need, but it's how it is actually, it's the structure of the organization. That progressive values are baked into the organizing structure. So there are seven different principles. I might be getting that wrong. But the principles of a cooperative include making sure that you're building in sustainability, there's capacity building for the community, that cooperatives work with other cooperatives to help each other. And it really is about building a strong community. It's one person, one vote. Rather than capital being the main driver of decision making. And so there's all these wonderful pieces in it that just by the very nature of the structure allows the magic to happen here where volunteers feel empowered to come in. They're volunteer. I call them volunteers. They're members of the station. They are the owners of the station. And they come and they come and nurture and learn and work every week to do better and better, to provide the service that we're doing, which is we are a radio station in the city of Vancouver. My favorite activity is twice a year, we sit down and we get on the phone and we call the membership to renew their members. So one of my favorite parts of my job here at the station are calling the members to renew their memberships, to contribute financially to the station, and also to ask, you know, how are they enjoying the programming? And for some people, when you tell them that you know, I have to get on the phone and start asking members for money, they think that must be a very difficult job. It's one of my favorites because everyone you speak to loves the station. They love the programming. They joke with you. They talk about how much they appreciate Mellow Mel on the Caribbean show, or how they want to meet Duke Lang, who does Better Days. And there are celebrities amongst this community programming membership. Many of them have been on air for 30 plus years. We have a number of, we have a very good mix and diversity of ages at the station, but we do have those signature programs that have been on, you know, since the 70s and 80s that have, and still have their following. So it's really quite a feat.
If you could change something, what would you change?
More money.
If there's anyone out there listening who has $250,000, I will do everything I can in my power to make it worth your while.
You know, it's, you know, I mean, I know that's kind of flippant and wishful thinking. On the other hand, it's there's a very real need to, and it's an altruistic reason to keep the station on the air and to keep it doing what it's doing. Because there are actually fewer voices being heard in a city, and you offer an opportunity to hear from different communities, which is incredibly important.
Yeah. Well, there's two things that I would absolutely love to accomplish during my time here. One is to have a morning drive news show that is local, that comes from an indigenous worldview, and that is paid, so that the programmers are receiving compensation for the work that they're doing. Putting on a 5-day a week morning news show is very difficult. And even if you have a collective of 10 plus people, it's still a lot of work. And the idea that I always say it's an indigenous worldview, but from a worldview as if Vancouver had been handed back to the people who have the rights and titles to this land that we're living on. That is a show that I would love to see come about from the membership. Another piece that I would do if we were funding would be to add in more robust equipment and studio space so that we could provide a low or no cost training facility on audio production, recording, post-production, digital marketing. And we are doing that right now, and we are doing a very good job of it, actually. And we're beginning to take our audio workshops out into the world, and they're in high demand. But with the extra money, we could really amp that up and become more a bit of an institution that is more that has that education piece beyond just preparing people to come and do the shows. That would really be my dream.
And actually, how about you? What would you dream for? What would you like to see changed?
Mm-hmm. I definitely like the institutional stability. Our station is in the downtown east side. Anyone who comes in traverses the folks who basically take up residence on our stoop. So I think I would love to see those folks housed. Mm-hmm. And I think about our AGM 2 years ago when current city councilor Gene Swanson came to speak to the membership about that. And again, my lens is so strongly informed by anti-poverty, and I just see how Co-op Radio is an institution in the downtown east side. You basically can't ignore it, right? As you come in the door here, there are folks who are out there. That's where they live. That is their community. Co-op Radio has become their community in a sense. But
they always say good morning.
They're very sweet folks. Often they're like apologetic. And I'm like, you don't need to apologize. Neoliberalism needs to apologize. Yeah. I would love to see that. I know it impacts the folks who come in here who are programmers and who are volunteers and members of the station. And I also recognize very few of us are so far away from that reality. Again, living in Vancouver where the cost of living is so high, I think that institutions like Co-op Radio become so important because we are not owned by developers or land barons or whatever. We are just folks in community, and those voices are getting pushed out. And there isn't really a place to go besides Co-op Radio. And I want to go back to that question that you asked Brian earlier about what distinguishes a co-op from a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's all this legal finesse and what you can and can't apply for as a co-op versus a nonprofit society or charitable organization. But also, I think fundamentally, within the co-op model, we don't have clients. We don't have this kind of paternalistic model that I think is often prevalent in nonprofits, where they have a defined kind of population that they want to serve, that they want to improve the conditions of. But at Co-op Radio, we're all community members. You're a member if you can have a share. It's kind of more of a collective project in the sense of what Brian described of how progressive values are baked in on some level, but also every person here has a voice and every person
has a vote.
Yeah, exactly. And we're not trying to deliver services to a community. We are the community. We are producing radio for the folks who are in this room, who are outside of this room. Our former board chair, Gwendolyn, used to talk about why Co-op Radio, because I think another pressure here is to go online, to go digital, to podcast, that type of production. And there's still an economic barrier there, right? And I think for myself, as someone who works on the show about prisons, there are no podcasts in prisons, but there are radios. Not everyone can afford a smartphone, but often you can find a radio somewhere. You can probably buy one at a pawn shop or at a street market or trade something. Not everyone can afford Wi-Fi in their home. Not everyone has a home where there is Wi-Fi. And I think that is the beauty of radio waves, right?
It's an, old, it's an old medium.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's an accessible medium. Yeah.
You know, if anything, you know, I've said for years, the only thing about the medium that's distinctive now is that the internet's probably kept radio alive. So it's given another platform for video, for publishing, and for audio. But interesting point. What is CRESS?
So CRESS is the charitable organization, Community Radio Education Society. And CRESS has a mandate around education, which is what makes the relationship with Co-op Radio so strong, because CRESS as an organization recognizes that Co-op Radio is providing that education to folks. So these are, it's a separate organization from Co-op Radio. If you're making a charitable donation ever, you'll note that the receipt comes from CRESS. They're organizations that are very intertwined. They kind of have this history where they've come up together. The founders of the station were very wise, I think, in how they kind of saw what was going to happen in terms of, like, what's the funding availability and can you get more funding if you have two organizations that have a very strong, well-defined operating agreement between the two of them. So CRESS also funds the MAC program, the Media Arts Committee, and I believe that those are our two main projects, are supporting Co-op Radio, which delivers the education, the training, the programming, and supporting MAC.
How does somebody take advantage of that? How does it like get more granular? How does it work?
So in terms of Media Arts Committee?
Yeah.
The Media Arts Committee is by and for media artists, and it's actually this wonderful program which people should apply for. It's for emerging sound artists, so people who are really just starting to explore that territory, and it allows them to receive compensation, so they're paid for it, to come and learn. They have 24-hour access to the studios. They work alongside mentors and big names in the sound art community, in the media art community, such as Hildegard Westerkamp, and then they're allowed, they're provided with access to online tools, online space. They produce one or two pieces for the program, which are then uploaded on their behalf, so they're made available. And then also there's events around the pieces that they do. So it's really a great place for someone who is emerging onto the scene to get their first chance and how to learn how to use the equipment. This is part of it, is there's the technical aspect, and then there's the art piece that comes in and the creativity around what you can do with this equipment to push it beyond the limits it's meant to go. And so this is part of what the CRESS is able to facilitate, which doesn't really happen in many other places.
So if I was a few years younger, how would I take advantage of this? How would I find out more?
You would apply to the MAC committee, which is on the CRESS website, which is also available on the Co-op website. And there is a committee that vets what kind of work you might have done or what you're trying to explore or where you are headed. We do make sure that it is also very diverse. There's gender balance and, you know, all those checks and balances are there. It's 15 people a year come through the program.
Nice. This is the Conversation Lab, and we're speaking with Brian McKinnon and Meenakshi Mano. We're talking about cooperatives and some of the challenges and opportunities that they're dealing with. You said something earlier that struck me about, if you had your dream team in place, or you could put your programming that you dream of in place, you'd have a morning show that would be a paid morning show. And I'm curious, is there a conflict in that discussion about how some programs would not be paid and some programs might be paid, and how do you navigate what would appear to be, you know, treacherous water?
Sure. So for myself, I don't find it to be treacherous. I think that, you know, we operate the station here, but we also recognize that our waves go across a host of territories that are unceded, where people have been dispossessed of their land. From here, sitting at the station right now, foremost the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. And I think that if we want to engage Indigenous folks in radio, and if we want to specifically engage Indigenous urban folks who are living in the community, we need to compensate them in a host of ways, and also give the land back. But we also,
there's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, that's the next podcast. But I think that there's no reason to not pay folks for their content, because they're also bringing expertise and wisdom and knowledge that we don't have, and we can't expect for them to give for free. Especially I think around Indigenous programming, because I think that's something that like the media arts world, the radio world, the community development world, we're all talking about it. And we need to put our money where our mouth is in that matter.
Do something about it.
Yeah. And ideally, a host of programs here would be funded, because so many of our shows address issues of inequity, of social isolation and exclusion. But I do feel like we need to start making some real strong commitments to Indigenous folks on
these. So the vision is really to take it to the next place, which is a beautiful vision.
Yeah, from fingernails to hanging on by our fingertips, and then maybe we have our hand on the ledge.
No, that's nicely put. Thank you. That's a great vision. It would be fun. I guess my question was more about, you know, it's starting to sound like a commercial model, and I think your explanation of how it comes together and why it makes perfect sense. But also I'm thinking that most not-for-profits have paid staff.
Yeah.
So that's not terribly unusual. Some human resource power to drive an organization to make it happen. And in this case, that commitment would probably bring in more listenership, which would bring in more funding.
Possibly, although we tend not to think about how we can get funding for the programming we're doing. We usually think, what's the program we need to do, and then go and find
the funding. Yeah, I think that's a capitalist outcome, a capitalist model that is ingrained in my thinking.
So that's one piece. Another piece would be that in terms of how who we are as an organization, it's also important to know when we are and what stage of, you know, the city of Vancouver we're in. And when you go back to the history of Co-op Radio, it was really an outsider community of, you know, folk musicians and you know, community journalists who are coming together to you know, take over the airwaves and broadcast what they believed was, you know, was their truth to be told in an environment that was more oppressive back then and very commercial. And so it's the first of its kind. And today, that same spirit exists. The youth culture has shifted and changed. When you think about volunteering, you know, back when I was younger, volunteering was somewhat easier because I could have one job and pay for my rent. And today, when we look at, you know, the youth market, they have three jobs and they're living with five people in a two bedroom or a one bedroom. And increasingly what we're seeing, you know, when there's a sense that when you think of Co-op Radio, you think downtown Eastside or, you know, East Vancouver or Burnaby, the drive and that type of thing. Our signal reaches all the way to Nanaimo, Salt Spring Island. It's east of Abbotsford. It's south, you know, beyond White Rock. So we have a great signal. We were able to make a big reach. And increasingly, we're seeing our volunteer base coming from South Surrey, coming from New West, coming from the Abbotsford, or the Langleys in Abbotsford. And it's those voices and those communities and the next generation and the new migrations that are coming in that are being attracted to our open door, first of all, that we just are completely open to accepting anyone who can come in and wants to volunteer, but also that they're able to do so in a familiar surrounding by and for members of their community in the language that they speak or that they're comfortable with. And so youth culture today is very different than it was, and it's very exciting. There's this explosion of new talent and new music coming up. Hip-hop and electronic dance really is the folk music of the 70s that is happening today, because it is. It has that underground aspect, but it's pushing boundaries and it's exciting. And as far as I know, no other radio station in the city wants to touch it, because they don't see it as, they want to play commercial top 40 hits all the time.
It's interesting that you frame the radio station in a historic way and talk about the different times and where it's been in relationship to those times and some of the key issues. And the station really is fluid and very transformative in terms of how it travels and represents the city at a particular moment. If I had never been in Vancouver before and didn't know about your radio station, what would you say? What would you tell me?
Well, it really depends on when you tune in. It is different all the time. I think if you want to plug into the city and plug into so many different communities, listen to A Day of Co-op Radio, and you will figure out places to go, places to eat, events that you want to be a part of, folks that you want to meet, music that you want to go see. You'll hear languages that maybe you haven't ever heard before. There's such diversity on the station. It could probably be a bit of a jarring experience at first. If you're brand new to the city and you're just tuning in to 100.5, but I think it's also the best way to get to know the city in terms of listening to a station, because you're not going to listen to top 40 drivel, and you're not going to hear the kind of very polished official Vancouver. You're going to learn about, like, what are the issues that are impacting people here? How are people talking about them? How are people subverting them?
So real conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I do. You know, do you have a favorite show? Do you have some favorite programs you love to listen to, like you won't miss?
Oh, I wish. I'm often listening to El Dulce de Siete. I don't understand it. I don't speak Spanish, but it happens to be the show on when I go to work in the morning.
Caballero, El Bus de la Siete.
Yeah, that's really good.
I think that sometimes it's just like whatever you happen to tune into. I've had the fortune of having a show that comes after The Rational, and I think that that's also a great show because you're hearing so much about, like, issues about social justice, mm-hmm. organizing that's happening here. I'm biased, of course,
that's
about
okay.
Stark Raven.
That's okay.
But I think that show's really important to folks as well. And we get correspondence from prisoners who are listeners and who have been listening to the show for a long time.
So it's got to feel good.
I won my tattoo at a Stark Raven event in 1997. It was Prisoners Justice
first?
Day. The first and only. It was the only way I was going to get a tattoo. I had to win it.
All right.
My favorite shows, I never listened to jazz until I came to Co-op Radio. And it turns out we have the best jazz programming, I believe, in the entire country. So Noon to New on the A Train and John Orsic on the Wild Ears. I love Duke Lang in Better Days. I wake up on Saturday morning at 7 o'clock, and he just has this very unique voice. I don't know if people realize that social media has become very important in radio, as does video in radio. And a number of our shows, the host will be engaging on like a Facebook page with listeners while they're live talking on the air. And you'll get 400 people engaging in a conversation on a show. I listen to the radio station at different times all the time, depending if I'm in the car or if I happen to be at home or if I'm making dinner, that kind of thing. I remember telling someone, we have a show called Each for All, which is a show about cooperatives. And I have to say, and it's really good. It's actually very interesting. I learn something every time. And they kind of look at me and it's like, how could a show about cooperatives be interesting? You know, like, why would, you know, listen to that week in, week out? But there are so many of our best organizations in the city and in the province were set up as cooperatives. And you're hearing the people, you know, who are in the senior roles talking about issues that are important to them and why their passion and their purpose is coming through.
Other reggae shows.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes. We're so blessed.
It's true. Like, it's, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get in trouble later. It's true. You're putting us on the spot.
Yeah, I don't mean to, but there's so many great shows. It's such a bonanza of programming.
If you're someone who, you know, appreciates music, then I would say check out Sunday. Our Sunday lineup is famous. It starts at 10 in the morning and it goes right till 10 at night in terms of just either world music or jazz, folk, bluegrass, and, you know, Afro-Caribbean. It's all in between. Many people will come up to me and say, I just leave Co-op Radio on all day Sunday and it's hard for me to leave the house.
Mm-hmm. Very nice compliment. So where do you go from here? What haven't we talked about, but what's really important to you?
I think for myself, it's supporting the kind of intergenerational conversations at Co-op Radio. We have this kind of depth and breadth of programming, and we have some incredibly committed longtime programmers. And I think this goes back to something that we've kind of been talking about, which is how being a member of a co-op, being a regular contributor and programmer at a co-op is this incredible experience, but it is very hard when you work three jobs, when you live in Maple Ridge, because that's where you could find affordable rent, things like that, have precarious employment. And so I think, like, how do we kind of build up that mentorship so that people who might not think they are in a place to be a programmer here for the next 30 years, but maybe have great ideas to contribute in the short term and we can figure out ways to kind of embed them in the station. But how do we support that kind of intergenerational programming here with a recognition that youth culture is rad and progressive and like pushing so many boundaries? And I think that that's the kind of programming that needs to get out there. But it takes real concerted outreach and effort and thoughtfulness about how we do that, because there are many barriers, right? Especially to folks who think like radio's not for me. I think like folks still don't see themselves in those roles. And how do we mentor folks and also just allow them to have access to the station in a way that they can produce the programming that best reflects them and their folks?
I would say that we're beginning to refer to ourselves, we are Vancouver Co-op Radio and Community Recording Studio. And increasingly, it's the Community Recording Studio that is a way for particularly youth or people who don't have a lot of time to volunteer to access the station on shorter term or irregular scheduled projects, such as podcasts or coming to record their tracks or their
podcasts or radio.
Podcasts or radio, although there are many radio hosts here who would argue that.
I'm only kidding.
No, but just,
I know it's a contentious issue.
But I agree with you on some level, which is a good podcast is a great radio show. There is something about the live nature of radio that really puts yourself on edge, but there's nothing to say. Many of our podcasts that we produce here at the station are actually recorded live and then with minimal editing, similar to this show here. So the piece that is, you know, we don't talk about a lot is the Community Recording Studio. The other piece is that when you're doing a radio show, you come in, there's someone in the control room, you know, there's a team in the control room before you. You see them as you sort of pass through the door with each other as the music is playing or a station ID is playing. And that's pretty much your interaction with other volunteers. So creating instances where this fabulous group of people who come and, you know, we produce 130 hours a week of original programming here at the station, getting that group together in different ways and finding for them to interact is a big piece of what I'm working on right now. We're starting an intercultural podcast by and for members of the station. And so the idea is that a show like such as It Takes a Village on Thursdays, they will provide the space for programmers from different shows and different cultures and communities to come in and have a discussion of what their understanding is around intercultural understanding, basically, or how their lives are impacted in different ways around different cultures. And this is an exciting new project because it's a way you need an organizing committee. So now you need to engage people from many different shows to come and work together. And for the first time, they're meeting each other for the first time. And then also they're sitting down and doing the thing that they do once a week, but with a different group of people who might approach radio from, you know, a little bit differently than they're used to. And it's the results are really fascinating and fun to watch. And it breaks down a lot of the silos that can exist even in an organization such as ours, you know, which prides itself on being as open and as accessible as possible.
What conversations are we not having at Co-op Radio?
It certainly feels like we're having them all the time. I think we have such an engaged membership that we often are talking about tough issues like equity, Indigenous folks at the table, meaningful involvement of racialized people, gender diversity at the station. I mean, I feel like maybe sometimes I'm having those conversations quite a bit. What are we not talking about? I think the thing that we have danced around in my time here is what our engagement with advertisements could be. And I think that as soon as you bring that up, people are concerned, right? They're concerned. They've been concerned since like the stations, the swap, the frequency swap years ago. And people are so cautious and protective of what we have at Co-op Radio that I think there's a real reluctance around advertising and the types of advertising that we will do. And I certainly echo all of that. And I also recognize that
There's a need.
We're having rent parties. and I think like that's actually the hard conversation that we're not having. It's not about anything to do with like identity in that way, although it is. But I think there's a piece there around like it how do we really reckon with our financial situation?
It also sounds because you have a collaborative model, you can probably sort through that. You can probably figure that out, which is what keeps you up at night?
Money. Literally 3 o'clock every morning I wake up and I go, oh my god. We have about a month or 2 months of money reserves in the bank, and okay. And I have to go out and get some.
So money is always an issue. Funding is always an issue,
which I think it is for everybody. Most yeah. nonprofits yeah. and even for profits. I've adopted a Zen mentality to it, which is it's all going to work out because it tends to work out. At the same time, working very hard to make sure that the next dollar comes in. I do think that I agree with Meenakshi that the conversation we're not having here as much because there's a fear around certain, you know, are we going to become a corporate? Are we going to sell out? Are we going to be taken over and co-opted by the man? Or people don't talk about the man anymore. Yeah. That was a big 90s thing. But I was at a marketing event yesterday, and it was teaching it. They were talking around how businesses are shifting from sort of mass marketing, and they're looking at niches. And so if we're talking about digital marketing, more advertising or dollars are spent trying to get into a social media space. And what they've discovered is that, you know, the opinion leader who has 500,000 friends is actually not an effective channel. It's more about an opinion leader who has about, you know, 1,100 friends, because the people that they're speaking to trust them. They actually feel a connection to them. And so when I look at what we are, I mean, Co-op Radio is, there are 85 shows. It's 85 individual nonprofits, you know, coexisting in the same space, producing their programming. Each of our programmer hosts are their opinion leaders, their cultural ambassadors to their communities. And so there's a very big opportunity for the station to realize that we actually have something that others dream to have, and we have access that very few people have in the world in terms of let's say call it traditional advertising. And so our mission and the discussion we're beginning to have is, what kind of services, what kind of products, what kind of social enterprises are values aligned with us that we would promote them through the airwaves? And it's a combination of who, so what is the right fit? And that will be a membership-wide conversation. And I will know the day that we've made a mistake, because I will be taken to task by many. But also, so it's who, but then it's also how. What is the message? How will we be delivering the message? How often? What's the frequency? We are not going to ever have 10 minutes in an hour of advertising. That just will never happen on Co-op Radio.
Are you limited by that in terms of CRTC promise of performance?
It is a little less than commercial, but nonprofit community stations do advertising across the country, and the college stations do. It is a smaller amount.
So you are allowed to run some commercials.
We're absolutely allowed to run advertising.
Okay.
Yes, there's nothing in our license that prohibits it. This is an internal conversation about who we are, because again, there's that fear of losing that core identity. What we have here is magic.
The bigger
and special
fear would be going off the air. That's a reality. I mean, if it's month to month, if it's hanging on by fingernails, you know, that's a real issue.
It is, but also I think for our membership, they've been hearing that we're on the brink for so long, and yet we still managed to come back. Exactly. And so we've done it without advertisements. And certainly, don't worry, I was someone in the board meetings who was very vocal about what I thought about commercial advertising and the types of people we could bring in and the types of organizations. But I think, Co-op Radio is magical. And it's a bit surreal that it actually exists, given that we basically exist month to month, year to year, without any core funding. And I think until you're on the board or really engaged with the station itself through the governance, you don't necessarily have a good understanding of how precarious the financial situation is, because we do have a lovely refurbished space that we have three studios in. We have nice, decent equipment for a nonprofit station. And I think that it's hard to imagine that we're always just a month or a few months away from shutting down the airwaves. It's magical thinking.
I love it though. It's okay. So how do we make sure that we keep it going, that you're not living month to month? If I want to become a member, what do I do?
Well, you go online to cooperadio.org. That's coopradio.org. And you hit the big donate now button. And annual membership, we suggest $100. It's up to you what you'd like to do. You don't have to become a member. You can just make a donation to the station. Best way to give also is monthly giving. I'm in my total fundraising.
No, that's good.
Best way to give is monthly giving. And so people who give anywhere, $20, $30 a month. But again, it's up to you what you'd like to give. Put a piece, set aside a portion of your estate in your will for Co-op Radio so that you can continue the legacy long after you're gone, so that the station can continue for another 45 years.
If I was a business and I wanted to support a program, and when I listen to NPR shows, I hear this program is funded in part by a grant from, can you do things like that?
Yes, we do have a sponsorship model. And it's actually, it is a wonderful way to align yourselves with a community, opinion leader or an ambassador. Sure. And again, we're very careful about who would we would take on for sponsorship, but absolutely there are organizations, nonprofits, social enterprises that will sponsor a show that they believe it has an important message to get out. We any of the content. They have no say in the content on what we deliver. They have no say on how the show is done. It's really that it's theirs to decide whether they want to put their dollars down on it. And it's very simple. You just contact the station through our website, community@cooperadio.org, to see different kinds of packages we do. And like most radio stations, it's a combination. There's radio, PSAs, or advertising, there's sponsorship, and then there's social media and direct marketing. We tend to have a good number of media savvy people, and especially youth here. And so our digital marketing is actually the best in the city, I think.
What haven't I asked you?
I feel like you've covered it all, Don.
Be sure?
I'm sure. I echo the thing that keeps me up at night when I think about Co-op Radio is how to equitably compensate people for the time and expertise that they bring here. So that means both supporting the staff, including Brian. That's always been something that is recognized, that we have people who are extremely skilled who work on the staff here, and I want to make sure that we compensate them fairly for their time. And then, are there ways that we can start to compensate programmers who are doing important community-based work? I think the Indigenous News Show is a great place to start. And then, like, how do we actually build up our capacity as a station so that people can get honoraria or stipends for the work that they're doing here, so that they do feel connected and that they also can sustain their lives and livelihood?
I love your passion and integrity, and it's been a real joy to speak to you about this. Thank you.
Thank you. I've really appreciated this conversation with you and Brian as well.
Brian, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This has been another episode of The Conversation Lab. We've been speaking with Brian McKinnon and Meenakshi Mano. We hope you learned a little bit more about Co-op Radio today, and if you like what the station is all about, we hope that you'll become a member. All you have to do is find us online at coopradio.org. This has been another episode of The Conversation Lab. The Conversation Lab is produced in Vancouver's downtown Eastside on the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. Our thanks to them and the many not-for-profit organizations and community groups for their support of this radio program and podcast. If you enjoyed it, please don't forget to support your local community or campus radio station. Also, if you know of anyone or an organization with a story to share, please let them know about us. We can be found at coopradio.org or theconversationlab.ca. The Conversation Lab is magically produced by Kimmett Sacon. Thanks, Kimmett. Thanks for joining us. I'm Don Schaefer.